This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past, and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us...
Keith Clark.
And my name's Finlay Mason. Now, Keith, at that stage, early in your university career, you came down with an illness, and that would bring about a few changes.
Yes, the illness developed and went from yellow jaundice to nephritis, and then acute nephritis, the same as Jonah Lomu, his experience. And so I ended up in hospital and spent 7 months in hospital, very close to death a good deal of the time. Just survived, and that's all, due to the good care of the nurses in the hospital and the doctors. And so... But there was very little they could do in those days, and all they could do was give me sunray treatment and massage, and I lived just about on water. I had to drink jugs and jugs of water every day, no real food much at all, a few grams a day. So I lost a tremendous amount of weight very quickly, and became a skeleton. And then... after about 5 months or so, suddenly I started to pick up again, and much to the delight of the nurses and everybody, because my mother had been having to stay up at the hospital because she thought, you know, I was going, and suddenly it all started to come right again. And for 2 months they looked after me, taught me to walk again, and I got fed up again with food and so on, and finally it was home again.
And you was able to take up your studies again?
At that stage, no. My parents had moved to Harry Harry, where he was now manager of the Harry Harry factory, and so I went home, and it took me... most of about 18 months, I suppose, for recovery. And my mother sent me up to my grandma, who was in Auckland then, and she lived at Murray's Bay, and to get away from the winter in Harry Harry. And so I spent a lovely 3 months up there with my grandma, and... I was able to do walks around to the beach and go for a dip in the sea, and all I had three aunties up there and an uncle, and they looked after me too. They took me all around. Alan Evans was one of them, and he was the Assistant General Manager of Railways, so he got me a free ticket on the buses and the trains and everything, and so I was able to get around and look at things too. So that was good. And I gradually kept recovering all the time. And then I found I could get a little job up in the valley picking strawberries at one stage. So that was a nice time too. After about 3 months, I decided, and Grandma decided, I was fine again. And so it was a long trip home on the old overnight express, and then on the ferry to Littleton, and then the rail car back down to Hokitika, and then staying in Hokitika the night with friends, and then back down to Harry again. So I spent the rest of that year down there, and the factory, it was the busy time for the factory, and they needed somebody in the store to write invoices and help supply the farmers with potatoes and petrol and all the various bits and pieces they needed for farming. And so I worked for most of that time that year then in the factory. And we used to have, there were quite a few young people that I knew in the area that they'd been at school up in Hokitika or Greymouth, and so about once a month we'd all get together and help each other with milking if necessary. And after milking, we'd have something to eat, and then we'd go off to a dance at the Francis Joseph or Wataroa or up to Ross or Hokitika. And we'd dance there till about midnight and home again about 2 or 3 in the morning. So it was quite a...
And have to milk the cows at 5 again.
And milk the cows again when we got back. So it was quite a time.
Now, you had some thoughts on the... primary schooling and the mix.
At that stage, I thought, well, this is not the life for me. I've got to do something else. So I thought, well, teaching seemed to be a pretty reasonable sort of job. And my teachers had said to me, you should go teaching. And so I applied and went to Greymouth and was interviewed. I passed the actual theoretical side, I suppose, very easily, no problem there. But the doctor said, I'm not sure about the shape you're in, whether or not you can sustain a teaching life. And so they said, just hold on, we'll consider it and let you know. So in January I got a letter to say they would not accept me for college the next year, but they offered me a sole charge school up in the Tiramacau settlement, way up the Tiramacau River near Mount Tirafoti. Across the road from the Otira to Greymouth Road. Right up in a very isolated valley.
And your nearest big town to that would be?
The nearest big town was Greymouth.
Yeah.
Greymouth, yes. Kumara was the small town about 12 miles away. And so I agreed. So it was pack up and my old trusty bicycle. In a way, I went, and the chairman of the committee met me at Kumara Junction off the train and took me up into the valley. And for that year, I had a term with each of the sort of families in the area. And so I had 9 children. And that was experience from 5 to about 13. And so I was the teacher for that year. And quite
a challenge for
a
new recruit.
Absolutely. And luckily the senior kids, the form 1 and 2 kids, were nice children, and they knew the ropes, and they very soon taught me what I was expected to do with all these children and where the books were and where everything was. So I really enjoyed it, and it was quite a challenge because one of the boys was a bit slow, and I spent a lot of time teaching him to read and managed to get some progress made. He came to see me a few years on, and he had a wife and an A55 car, and here was I with an old baby Austin and he was getting a lot more money than ever I was. He'd gone from there onto the dredge at Canary, and he'd been able to get a job that he could press buttons and on the stacker belt.
Now, we're talking about a gold dredge, aren't we?
Yes, a gold dredge, yes. And so it was funny. But anyway, it was a very enjoyable year, and there were several young people there, and about once every month we'd get together in the school, and we'd have a sort of impromptu dance. We'd have an old gramophone and wind it up, and we'd try to dance and that sort of thing, and sing. Oh, and the girls used to bake a cake, and the boys, we always had to get something to eat, either venison or we'd do what was very naughty. We'd use a nickel spinner and pick up a trout somewhere, so we'd have an evening like that.
Was this a farming community?
Yes, it was a dairy farming and two sheep farms in the area. There were about four or five dairy farms, and a sheep and a couple of sheep and one cattle sort of farm in the area. So very isolated.
So your teaching career got underway. Your teaching career got underway.
Underway at this stage, and the inspector came out, and he was amazed that I'd been able to take the kids up into the bush, and we'd found clay, and we'd made pots out of clay, and we'd fired them, and we'd done all sorts of things like that, interesting things. Yeah. And of course, my science background was good because it went across to natural things as well. So, and he was very pleased with the progress I'd made with these kids, and so he recommended me straight away. And so I found myself at Teachers College in 1948.
Whereabouts?
Christchurch. Hmm? So I was back to my old haunts in Christchurch again. And
living with the family again. Living with the relatives.
Yes, yes. And, but no, not allowed to play contact sports.
Okay.
I was pretty limited in what I could do for a while. Yeah. But then, as the year went on, I certainly recovered. And I was able to get back into athletics, and I started to play tennis again, because I'd been a very good tennis player earlier. And I started to play indoor basketball, and I learned how to play softball, and I've learned to play soccer. And so they were all new and exciting sort of experiences for me.
And all added to your CV when you entered the real world of teaching.
Yes,
you would be
yes.
a sports master as well.
Sports, yes. I can. And of course, but the hardest job I had in that 2 years I was there was learning to swim. In those days, all teachers had to have a bronze medallion. And so I was a non-swimmer, although I was used to water. I could get into the rivers or anything like that. But I could sort of dog paddle and find my way around, but I had to do a bronze. So that meant 220 breaststroke and diving for a brick and all sorts of things like that. And so it took me 2 years. I used to go to the tepid pools at 7:30 in the morning and swim for an hour. For 2 years, until I was able to pass the bronze. And while I was there, I did some varsity work as well. I went back to varsity again while I was at college and started to accrue some papers again.
Yes.
So, and of course, the most important thing was this was a time when the returned soldiers were back in circulation.
Yes.
And many of them wanted to be teachers.
Yes.
And so we had a very strong complement of very experienced soldiers amongst our training group that time, and they were very, very much respected for their input into everything. They were very good citizens.
Not only from what they'd done, but for the experience they brought back.
The experience they brought with them.
Yes.
One of the experiences that they brought back with them caused a lot of abuse, because on a Wednesday afternoon, we had a sports day, sports afternoon. And two of my friends, one of them was Murray Chappell, the captain of the New Zealand cricket eventually, and the other one was Malcolm Cargo from Temuka, who became a very good referee up in Hamilton, up that way, eventually. And we used to go down to Hagley Park and practice cricket and all that sort of soccer and all sorts of things. And but these returned soldiers, they joined what they call a jogging group, and they would run out on a Wednesday afternoon at 1 o'clock, out the gate, that would go like anything. And we wouldn't see them again till late in the day. And they were pretty merry. And so I followed them one day, and they went about 200 yards down the road to the Dirty Duck, the White Swan pub. And they spent the afternoon there. So that was quite a hilarious part about it. So my college days were very important and very interesting. And I went tramping all over the place, skiing up at Mount Arthur. So I got back into my sort of sporting and outdoor activities again. Yeah. And then I was in the common room. We used to have morning tea in the common room. And for threepence, we'd get a cup of tea and a biscuit. So I was in the queue, and next to me in the queue was this very vivacious girl. And I got talking to her, and I found she was a country girl from up in Marlborough, back country in Marlborough. So we had a lot of things in common. And then she said, "Can you dance?" And I said, "Yes." Well, she said, "Will you have a dance with me at the Friday night dance we used to have?" Well, I could dance all right, and she soon found that out, and so that was the start, and she's now my wife.
Lovely.
Yes, so that was they were very exciting days.
Towards the end of the training college days, you'd spend periods of time out in outlying schools.
Yes, it was I think that's what set me up for later in life and the way I worked with students here. We had 6 weeks in and 6 weeks out. And each time we had a different level. And so that was one of the factors that seemed very well worth training. It was only a two-year training for us in those days. And we were paid. And I believe that they're going to have to come back to that again. In New Zealand, because we just don't have the teachers now. And also in those days, teaching was a very respected profession, and if you were a teacher in a school, you were looked up to, but there was strong discipline in a school, and so that was It's not happening so much today.
You'd be more anonymous in a big city school, but certainly out in the country area, you were virtually the centre of the community.
Yes. So, and I went out to some of the... Yaldhurst was one of the little country schools that they sent students to. I went out there for a while, and that was good. My wife was a year ahead of me, and she went off to Seddon School as a probationary assistant. I spent the rest of the year at college and got into sport a lot, and then I got a probationary assistant's position in Greymouth. So I spent all of 1950 in Greymouth, teaching at Grey Main School with about a P4 Standard 1 group of about 20-odd children. A very nice group of children, but it was not an easy school overall, because they had a lot of miners' children there and a lot of timber working children and so on. And the kids were good once you got to know them, and the the principal, the first day I walked in before I got started school, he said to me, "Have you got a strap?" And I said, "Sorry, I don't." He said, "Right." He wrote a little chit out, and he said, "Take that down to the Mahuira, the key. There's a cobbler down there. Give that to him." So I went down, and he laughed like anything, this guy, and he went out the back and came out with a strip of leather, which he handed to me. And the principal said, "Now," he said, "the first day you're out in the playground on duty," he said, "any big boy, especially, that plays up, give him a good thrashing out on the playground so everybody can see." So I didn't have to do that because I started to coach the boys in rugby and coach the boys in softball, and so they weren't going to cross me anyway, so it was good. But I played rugby that year for Greymouth, or one of the teams in Greymouth, and that was an interesting.
You mentioned sort of time. The class was made up primarily of kids whose parents were involved in either timber or coal mining.
Coal mining, yes. It was
what was significant about that as far as the kids go? I mean, that they would provide the family with a good income. They wouldn't be...
No, they weren't poor children or anything like that. They were just... I think their parents were pretty tough. They played league and, you know, all that those sort of games. And they were used to standing up for themselves.
Yeah.
Pretty independent kids.
Yeah. Would have been quite a challenge for someone who didn't have your sort of sporting background for them to sort of...
It could have been,
you
yes.
had a built-in respect, though.
Yes, anything. Could have been, yes. And several of the teachers that I worked with there became up here. They came up to Palmerston because in those days, all the people from this area went to Christchurch. Wellington Teachers College wasn't going, and Massey wasn't going, so they all had to go to
do their training college.
Training college in Christchurch, yes. Yeah. So there were a lot of local people went to Christchurch in those days. So that was the sort of beginning, and from there, my parents moved again, this time to Rangitiki Dairy Factory, and so I applied to the Whanganui Board to have a placement up this way, so they gave me a relieving position at Bald's for the following year.
Where's the Rangitiki Dairy Factory? Where was that?
At Bald's.
At Bald's.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so I spent a term there. And then suddenly a telegram arrived and said, "Please report to Kaitiiki School." And I said, "Where on earth's that?" Because when we started teaching in that time, we had to sign a paper to say we were prepared to go anywhere in New Zealand teaching. So there it was, Kaitiiki.
Now I know where Kaitiiki is.
Yeah, and so... off I went on the train, and they met me at Rauiru and took me down to Kaitiiki. It was a road through to the Whanganui River, the Retiruti, and on to the Whanganui River. And it was a sole charge school, and there were 22 children, and 20 of them came by horse. There were two little local ones, and the rest were all came by horse. And there was one big white half draft that was the 5-year-old horse. And so any of the farmers that had a 5-year-old would get this horse, and you could put a child on it and give the horse a slap and say, "School!" And it would trot along until it came to the school, and or meet up with other children coming to school, and they'd all come together. But it was
what year are we talking about now?
We're talking about 1951. Mm-hmm. And so I was there for the rest of the year and enjoyed it. It was a interesting school. I got quite a lot of things done in the school. We had a kiwi at one stage that a possum trapper had, and so we had a kiwi for a little over a week, and we used to bathe it every day with meth. It's there, you'd had an egg caught in a trap, and so we tried to fix that, and every day we didn't get much work done over that week because we had to find worms for the kiwi. It would eat just about a Edwin's baking powder tin of worms a day, so and it used to get into all the dark places around the classroom. The kids got used to it being there, and I think it got used to the kids too. It was we were very sorry. After a week or so, its legs got better, obviously better, and I took it back up to the possum trapper, and he let it go again up at its habitat again.
So. Quite an intrusion into the classroom teaching, yeah. But yeah. It's still a valuable lesson, I'm sure, for the kids.
It was great, and these children also. I used to take them out once a month to Tamarui School. On a Friday, I'd arrange with the parents to carpool everybody, and we'd all go to the Kemenui school, and I'd put the children into the classes, the equivalent classes in the big school, and they would work there for the morning, and in the afternoon, on the Friday afternoon, they had sport, and so they'd join in with rugby and basketball and so on, and two of them got into the reps, and that was, our parents were just over the moon about that. But of course, it was
was this an initiative of your own, or was part
this
of the policy?
Mine, but there was the chance if you applied to the board, they had to approve it.
Yes,
yes, and so that was part of it. So anyway, by that time, I don't know whether I should describe my wife had a job then. At Tihoro, she was my girlfriend at the time, and we arranged to meet on a particular weekend about every 6 weeks or so, and I used to arrange with the mailman to come by about 3:30 and pick my bike up. He'd take me up to Rarumu, and I'd leave my bike in the district high school at the time there and catch a slow train to Owakuni. I'd wait there until it was picture time, and it was always Tom Mix and everything like that going on, and big bang bangs and all sorts of things in the theatre, and then at 10:30 I'd come out and go to the station and watch a big poker game going on in there usually until the limited came through at about midnight, and that would be deposit me at Martin at about I can't remember the time now, but 4 or 5 in the morning, quite early in the morning anyway, and Mum or Dad or occasionally Leslie would meet me there in our car, and I'd go home, and I'd spend have a weekend there, and Leslie and I would go to a dance on the Saturday night somewhere, and then on the Sunday I would catch the old train again, which would drop me off at Rarumu at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Then it was on my bike and 9 miles downhill to Kaitiki again in the dark, and sometimes the rain with an old bike and a little old lamp, and what an experience. But the one of the funniest events there was this was an area where there were a lot of returned men breaking in blocks, and so there was always smoke and they were burning up and all sorts of things, and they decided to put up a rifle range, and so they did down Rataruki way, and then one day they had it all ready and they decided to open, and I got an invitation. Well, I got a ride down to this place, and they meticulously, when it came to my turn, showed me how to work a rifle, and and then showed me the sights and how the sights worked, and told me how to pull the trigger and all that sort of thing. And so I didn't say a word. I just got down on the mound, and I had to fire a sighter for a start, and that was a bullseye. Well, that was a little bit shocked. So I then fired 10 bullseyes, one after the other, both at the 100, and then later the 200, and then later the 300. And that was the first time anybody had ever got a possible.
So they, you then had to confess your background.
And so they said, "You had us." And that was the laugh of the district for a while.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz. Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.